From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Eureka Springs is one of the top arts destinations in Arkansas. This historic village of 2,100 residents, over 200 artists, and more than 35 galleries presents weekend tours and second Saturday gallery strolls each month through December. Eureka Springs, where American art is made.
Later on this edition of Ozarks, Antoinette explains how the materials seized and collected by local police departments go to auction. And just ahead, the fate of undocumented young people who make it to Northwest Arkansas.
First, proposals to increase Arkansas's minimum wage and to legalize alcohol sales statewide are a step closer to making it onto the November ballot. The measures have met the required number of signatures to earn inspection from the Secretary of State's office over the next several days. Give Arkansas a Raise Now wants to incrementally raise the minimum wage in Arkansas from $6.25 an hour to $8.50 an hour. The chair of the effort, Steve Copley, says success now depends on turnout in November. He says he's confident the measure will have enough support.
The polls have shown 78-79% of Arkansans support, so that's very good support. So we think that if it's on, when it's on the ballot, it'll pass.
Copley says if the signatures are verified, Give Arkansas a Raise Now will again be working hard to inform voters that the measure will be in front of them.
We have one challenge, is just to get the message out to people of Arkansas that this will be on the ballot and how important it is to go out and support this at the ballot box.
The Secretary of State's office will spend the next several days making sure the signatures collected are valid. If either proposal fails to have enough valid signatures among those turned in at the Capitol yesterday, there will be an additional 30 days for the groups to collect more valid signatures.
Two groups seeking marijuana reform did not turn in signatures before yesterday's deadline. Two measures, one for medical marijuana and the other for recreational use, failed to collect enough signatures. Campaign director for the Arkansas Medical Cannabis Act, Melissa Fultz, says she's disappointed the measure will be absent from the ballot.
There's that feeling of we've made great strides. We've educated a lot of people. We've come so far. We're ready to get ready in 16 and knock it out of the park and bring it home.
She says the effort to place medical marijuana reform on the ballot in 2014 fell short by about 10,000 signatures. A similar medical marijuana measure made the ballot in 2012 and received approval by more than 48% of the state's voters.
Less than a week after the city of Fayetteville celebrated a major infrastructure improvement, the city of Springdale is doing the same thing. It was last week when Fayetteville officials cut the ribbon for the Fayetteville flyover that connects College Avenue with the Fulbright Expressway. Yesterday, Springdale officials cut a ribbon opening a new interchange on Interstate 49. The exchange links I-49 to the Don Tyson Parkway and will give motorists another way to get to Springdale and Arvis Ballpark.
The CityWire.com is reporting building permits in Fort Smith are experiencing a bump up. The city says since January, there have been more than $77 million in permits, an increase of more than 45% when compared to the first 6 months of 2013. Fort Smith, Van Buren, and Greenwood combined issued permits valued at nearly $100 million for the first 6 months of 2014.
A longtime professor at the University of Arkansas will be the interim dean of the U of A's Honors College. Kurt Rome will take over the post later this month when the current dean, Bob McMath, officially retires. Rome has been director of the Honors Program in the Dale Bumpers College of Agricultural, Food, and Life Sciences since 2011 and has instructed honors courses and advised honors students for a decade. A national search for a permanent replacement is underway.
Justin Smith of Springdale is the new Chief Business and Community Outreach Officer at the Ozark campus of Arkansas Tech. Most recently, he served as the statewide logistics sector manager and Northwest Arkansas project manager for the Arkansas Economic Development Commission.
Matters of faith and religion continue to play a part in the campaign for the U.S. Senate between Senator Mark Pryor and Congressman Tom Cotton. Last week, Congressman Cotton criticized Senator Pryor's reaction to a Supreme Court ruling by saying the senator thinks faith is something that only happens at 11 on Sunday. This week, the campaign for Senator Pryor released an ad critical of Congressman Cotton's remarks. The new ad is reminiscent of an earlier one in the campaign in which the senator discussed his faith. Congressman Cotton's latest campaign ad ties the incumbent to the Affordable Care Act. Congressman Cotton says Senator Pryor's support for the Affordable Care Act infringes on religious liberty for people objecting to practices like abortion.
a member of the Fort Smith Board of Directors, says an informal meeting tomorrow will include a discussion about a possible professional sports franchise in the city's future. The letter from Director Philip Merry was shared with the press by City Administrator Ray Gosak. The letter says the meeting at noon tomorrow at the Golden Corral restaurant in Fort Smith would include a presentation about the dream and possibilities of a professional sports arena and citizens-owned team in downtown Fort Smith.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are taking the day off after finishing a homestand with a 6-1 loss to Frisco last night. The result leaves the Nats with a 9-9 record for the second half of the season and in first place, a game ahead of the Arkansas Travelers. The Naturals will return to Arvest Ballpark for a 7-game stretch on Sunday.
Three former Naturals will be on the American League team at next week's Major League All-Star Game in Minneapolis. Salvador Perez, the American League starting catcher, played for the Naturals in 2011. Two AL reserves, Alex Gordon and Greg Holland, also played for the Nats during their minor league careers.
There is a 30% chance of rain tonight in northwest Arkansas and a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms for the Arkansas River Valley. Lows throughout the region tonight will be between 66 and 72. Tomorrow, expect mostly sunny conditions with highs from the mid to upper 80s. And for tomorrow night, the forecast includes a slight chance of rain with lows again from 66 to 72.
This is Ozarks at Large. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is reporting tens of thousands of children, many under the age of 18, mainly from Central America, are crossing the United States border unaccompanied by their families. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently met with a young teenager from El Salvador, newly arrived in Northwest Arkansas, and Jacqueline brings us her story.
In 2011, 4,000 children from Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador entered the United States illegally, seeking refuge from poverty and violence. 2 years later, more than 21,000 had crossed. This year, more than 50,000 children have been smuggled through Mexico, primarily to the Texas border, where most are abandoned. They're being picked up by U.S. Border Patrol agents, processed, then placed into custody of U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Some are placed with relatives in the United States, the rest in foster or group homes until an immigration court determines their fate. Among these child migrants are two girls from El Salvador attempting to reunite with their mom, who's been living in Northwest Arkansas for more than a decade. The mother, Melissa, not her real name, had scraped together $8,000 to pay a coyote, a human smuggler, a woman, to bring her kids to the U.S. border.
Porque se ha venido mucha gente de allá, y pues...
The lady has passed a lot of people through the border, and she doesn't have any history of anybody dying on her. So I felt that it was secure.
Diana Barrera serves as translator for the interview. In El Salvador, Melissa worked as a nursing assistant for 12 hours a day, earning $50 a month. Melissa came to the United States to build a new life, she says, expecting her daughters would soon follow. They didn't. Melissa's daughter, Carla, not her real name, arrived at the border in early May. She's 17, petite, and very pretty. She described living without her mom.
It was very sad because I was living without my mom and without a dad. We were living with my grandmother, and that was my sister included too. And it had been a lot of years since I had seen her. And my dream was always to be able to be with my mom and my sister again.
But despite paying $8,000, the 3,000-mile-long crossing was perilous.
It was very difficult. I had to hide to be able to cross the border in Guatemala because I'm a minor. And then crossing all of Mexico, it was really difficult for food, too. There were days where we didn't have food to eat. But my consolation is that I was with my sister. And we would have to walk for long periods of times at night And when we got to the border and we were arrested, my sister was separated because she's an adult and I was a minor. So she was put in one cell and I was put in another cell. And I haven't seen her ever since.
Her older sister has just turned 18, so is facing immediate deportation as an adult. Child migrant cases are handled differently. Still, Carla was arrested and jailed, detained for 18 days, and reunited with her mom in Northwest Arkansas.
It was a very big emotional moment because I really didn't remember how she looked like. And I was really little whenever she left, and it was very emotional to be able to see her again.
Carla will remain in Northwest Arkansas until her immigration court hearing in Memphis occurs, which has not been scheduled. There is a massive backlog of cases right now due to the insurgence of child migrants across the U.S. border. Carla is being represented by Laura Ferner Mowdy, a Northwest Arkansas immigration and family law attorney who specializes in child migrant cases. A portion of that labor, pro bono.
There's coyotes who just drop children off at the border and say, go get picked up, and that's pretty horrible. And, I mean, I have had children as young as 4 years old get lost in this jumble, and it is pretty tragic, and I feel also that these parents are desperate. If the parents are here in the United States, they're often desperate because they're sort of out of control of, they're not there to protect their own children. So I think as a mother myself, I don't know what I would do.
Ferner Mowdy says Carla was lucky. Border crossings are fraught with violence, physical abuse, rape, and extortion, and three-quarters of those crossing are girls. The girls fled El Salvador after Carla's sister was attacked by a gang. Fortunately, she was not physically harmed, they say, because a former boyfriend intervened. Her sister's deportation case, however, is precarious, having been expedited because she failed to show proof of credible fear in her request for asylum.
So I have instructed the mother now to hire an attorney in Texas, and we have found somebody who will actually assist with that. And the reason why I think it's better, because it's a local attorney, is somebody right there where she's at, so they can help her with that.
U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services is reporting an unprecedented number of credible fear referrals in Central America, traced to reports of increased drug trafficking, violence, and overall rising crime in those countries. Immigration attorney Laura Ferner Mowdy.
The gang members are so prevalent in those countries, and they extort money from everybody or ask young people to join or sexually harass these girls all the time is a generalized fear. Oftentimes, and it's not in a particular social group. So this has to be, that's more the problem in a lot of these asylum cases.
Anti-immigration activists say stories of gang violence are being fabricated by these asylum seekers, but experts say it's quite real and why so many are seeking asylum in the United States right now.
I've seen a huge influx, and this is a little before the stories on the news started showing up. I noticed that I was getting more and more consultations regarding minors. I was getting more and more mothers or parents call. Well, it's usually the mothers. The fathers are hardly ever in the picture, I've noticed, looking for their children.
While she wins a good number of her cases, some of Laura Ferner Mowdy's clients are deported.
Detained and then deported and then removed and put into shackles. I have had clients that were murdered upon return shortly after. So that's always very sad to hear and tragic. And it makes me sad in a lot of cases. So I don't know. I try to keep them here as long as I can.
Late last month, President Barack Obama requested $1.4 billion in federal assistance, as well as congressional action to expedite the processing of thousands of child migrants languishing in detention centers and at large, prosecute child smuggling networks, and address the root cause of mass migration. And with comprehensive immigration reform perennially stalled out, the president has, quote, promised to fix the immigration system without Congress, end quote. via future executive actions. Republicans reportedly are threatening to sue the president for breach of the U.S. Constitution. In the meantime, as many as 90,000 migrant children are expected to cross the U.S. border by the end of this year, and more are expected to find refuge in Northwest Arkansas. While she waits for her and her sister's case to resolve, Carla is already making future plans.
Pues estudiar el inglés. Primero Dios sacar una carrera. Secretaria me llama mucho la atención. Y pues
I want to study and learn English, and I want to be able to get a career. Being a secretary seems very interesting to me, and I just want to be able to be someone and be known.
But until comprehensive immigration reform is passed, Carla will not be able to secure an American identity. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
In about 10 minutes on Ozarks, Christina Karnatz is back at a creek with our insect guide, Dr. Donald Steinkraus.
It's a very pretty little animal, that crazy long abdomen, those little delicate wings. But these two use their legs to, see his six legs there? They use them as a basket, capture little small midges and small insects, and then eat them alive. And they have these big eyes sort of on each side of their head. Have extremely good vision.
Summer, bugs, and water. We take a field trip in just a bit on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. Here now, resident chef Kathy Gunst is helping us eat our way through the season. This time, sauces.
The idea of a summer sauce is that it is very simple, it uses only seasonal ingredients, and it enlivens all these simple foods that we rely on in the summer.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen this afternoon from 1 to 3 to KUAF Public Radio.
Most Tuesday afternoons, trucks and vans park in every nook and cranny of the Callaway Auctions property in Springdale. Behind the long, faded red building, located just a few yards off of 71B, local residents looking for a good deal peruse coffee tables, televisions, and boxes full of anything from records to Christmas decorations. The business's namesake is Harold Callaway.
When I started in here, I was 27, and I'm 62. Been here a long time.
Callaway receives help running his business from his children and his wife. She's the one who encouraged him to open the auction house years ago.
I lost a job that I had. It was closed up. I was looking for something to do, and my wife said, you like to talk and you like people, let's try this. So we've been here almost 35 years.
Anyone can buy or sell items at the auction, and Callaway says he will sell anything as long as it's legal. Although Callaway sometimes conducts auctions at other places, he does the bulk of his work at a Springdale location. Consignments must be submitted by noon on Tuesdays, and Callaway charges 25% commission. The auction begins outside at 4:30 and then typically moves indoors later in the evening. Callaway says running an auction house is a lot of hard work, but he enjoys it and finds it fun to interact with people. Last week, the city of Fayetteville was one of the Springdale auctioneer's clients.
Years ago, and we just put in a bid and told them what we'd do for them, and we got it. And we've been doing it ever since. We used to sell cars and everything for them, but they're doing something different with that.
The city of Fayetteville public auction included iPhones, laptops, and bicycles. A number of these items belonged to the police department. Sergeant Craig Stout, public information officer for the Fayetteville Police Department, says in the past, the department has had its own auctions, but they found it was a better use of time and resources to organize an auction in conjunction with other city agencies. Because these public auctions include items from different groups, any money earned from the sales go into the city's general fund. Sergeant Stout says the items the department puts up for auction are typically seized property or lost and found property.
And unfortunately, we just can't have that stored indefinitely. We have a limited amount of storage space, so we have to make room because, unfortunately, new items come in all the time.
Sergeant Stout describes the department's evidence room as slightly larger than his office at the Northwest Arkansas Mall, which is approximately 30 feet by 40 feet. The department also has a larger warehouse located off-site where officers can store bigger, bulkier items. Sergeant Stout says it varies, but they usually organize these auctions about once a year. When it comes time to auction property, the police department must first gain permission from a judge.
And talking with our property evidence manager, for items that are either for, you know, like up for auction, what we do is they, rather than a case-by-case basis, it's all kind of lumped into one thing that the judge signs off on it. And the wording is such that says, you know, we have made every effort to try to, you know, we cannot find the rightful owner of this property. And, you know, we've done everything that we can, and we now want to sell it at auction. And then the judge looks at it and basically saying that, okay, if you've done everything here that you said you're going to do, I now sign off on this and try to return it to auction, and we can sell it for auction. So it takes up a little less time as opposed to a case-by-case basis and puts more of the burden back on the police department as opposed to the judge.
Now, not all property can be auctioned off. Weapons, for example, are typically destroyed. The police department's public information officer says some municipalities take seized weapons to a metal recycling facility where they can be melted, but Fayetteville doesn't have the ability to do that yet.
We actually, believe it was about a year or two ago, had a where we had to destroy a bunch of weapons. And what they would do is the we went down to a location where we had a big chop saw, and we chopped up these and then took them to an undisclosed location to make sure that even just the parts could not be recovered. So they did that. Things like drugs of that nature, we make sure that those are disposed of properly. Typically, those are taken to an incinerator that has to get to a certain temperature, because, again, you don't want these things falling into the wrong hands or causing a you know, an environmental issue. That's why we have, you know, specific things like drug take-back days, because you don't want those getting out into the environment.
Prior to last week's auction, a post on the police department's Facebook page helped alert the public to the sale. In addition to the time and place of the auction, the post also included a list of items up for auction, as well as a telephone number for residents to call if they believed they were the owner of any of the listed property. Sergeant Craig Stout says the department makes every effort to return property, and local residents can aid in the process by keeping good records of their belongings.
We try to stress, you know, to citizens, make sure that you document anything that you have, write down your serial numbers. And if something does come up lost or stolen, we recommend that you do file a report on that, because it makes it easier. If there's any identifiable marks on your phone or something like that, to do that. You know, if you look at like an iPhone, though, unfortunately, most people have a lock on their iPhone. So, and the only thing we have the ability to do is maybe look at a serial number, something like that. So it makes it very hard. So, you know, we recommend filing some type of report and making sure that you document those serial numbers, just so if something does happen, we're able to reunite you with your property.
Sergeant Stout notes that an item doesn't have to be stolen in order to file a report. Residents can report personal property missing if they simply lost it. Sergeant Stout says it's quite common for honest citizens to find an item and turn it into the police department in hopes of finding the rightful owner.
You can file a lost report on just about anything of value. If it's something that is valuable to you, it may not have a lot of monetary value, but if it has sentimental value, you want to make sure that you try to get that back. So, you know, anything that you have lost or believe has been stolen, we recommend that you file a report on that, because we're not, unless we know about it, it makes it that much more difficult for us to try to get that back to you.
You can contact the Fayetteville Police Department with non-emergencies at 587-3555. For more information about Callaway Auctions, visit callawayauctions.net. This is Ozarks at Large.
It is Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I restrained myself yesterday, but how the heck could it be July 8th? What has happened?
It's one day, and then it's the next day, and then the next day, and the numbers
get
bigger?
I know.
But then they get into the 30s usually, and they drop back off. That's how it works.
Which is also a great way to keep track of your age.
Yes.
But I digress. It is Fleur Delicious weekend, although it's not a weekend. It starts today in Eureka Springs.
Mm-hmm.
How can you go wrong with a French-themed celebration that came out of someone who lived in New Orleans moving to Eureka Springs. I don't see how that can be bad.
Can't be.
Starts tonight with a guest chef's presentation, Sampling and Sips, at the Writers Colony at Dairy Hollow from 5 to 7. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, there's a Spookalicious tour and spirit tasting.
I bet I know where that is.
It is at the Crescent Hotel.
I love it.
I do, too. Wednesday, they're counting this, Wednesday over water at Crystal Bridges Museum.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then there's a four-course wine dinner at Gaskin's Cabin.
Oh, wow.
Thursday, Eureka Springs Farmers Market includes cooking demos with Chef Dave from the Grand Tavern and KJ of Caribe. How could you go wrong with that? And then you get to next weekend when there's French coffee and pastries for free, a new thing at KJ's Caribe. It's called Palette to Palette. One the kind you eat, one the kind you paint on.
Oh.
With Denise Ryan. That's from 6 to 9 on the 11th. And then Tour Delicious, which is dinner by Fresh on Cafe, the Rolling Cafe Roulant. White Street Farmers Market. Waiters Race at 3 o'clock on Saturday. It's going to be a great time.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On the final day of winter, Ozarks at Large's Christina Karnatz visited Clear Creek in northwest Fayetteville with our OAL insect expert, Dr. Donald Steinkraus. Many of the insects they found that day were in the nymph stage, the portion of life when an invertebrate is immature. It's before the transition into adulthood. Earlier this month, Christina and Dr. Steinkraus returned to Clear Creek, not long after the first official days of summer, to see what had changed.
Clear Creek is a perfect place to get that Country Creek vibe without leaving Fayetteville city limits. A Highway 112 bridge runs right over it. The sounds of traffic can be heard from below. But that doesn't distract from the flowing waters and green trees that meet in the middle overhead. On the day of our visit, a family had set chairs up on the banks as youngsters swam in the depths, and a father-son duo searched for critters, much like Dr. Steinkraus and I do, complete with their bucket and net. As it turns out, many of the insects we found were flying above the waters, in and out of the grasses and flowers along the creek's side, some of which were mere babies when we visited back in March. Among other specimens, we had found many damselfly nymphs. At the time, it was a small, flat insect crawling the bottoms in search of food. Now, as an adult, the damselfly is dodging in and out of tall grasses. Dr. Steinkraus is able to catch one by swooshing an insect net after it. He says this insect is one of his favorites, with dark, black, smoky wings, and a predator in all stages of life.
It's a very pretty little animal, that crazy long abdomen. Those little delicate wings, but these two use their legs to see his six legs there. They use them as a basket, capture little small midges and small insects, and then eat them alive. And they have these big eyes sort of on each side of their head. Have extremely good vision. These are also very ancient insects. These things have been around for many millions of years. Considered one of the ancient groups. Yet. You know, in some ways, some of the best flyers out there. Do you want to hold it?
No.
It's very gentle. It can't hurt you. This one's so small. There, you see, it's friendly. That one's...
The damselfly is able to catch flies and midges mid-flight thanks to spines on its legs. Gathering the six appendages together to form a basket and relying on keen eyesight to help with the catch, they will eat their prey alive. The damselfly looks much like the dragonfly and is often mistook as such. Dragonflies are even more difficult to catch because of their extremely sharp eyesight, making them hard to sneak up on. Steinkraus says that some entomologists will take the shells out of a shotgun and replace them with sand and shoot the dragonflies with it because otherwise they are very difficult to capture. But with determination and patience, we snag one. I am enamored by those beautiful teal-colored eyes.
If you look at it, you can see it's like this massive, giant hemispheres of eyes made up of thousands of facets called omatidia. And then it's got this front mouth parts here, captures a mosquito on those legs, and it's trying to bite me. See that? It's pinching me with its mandibles, but it's so small it can't really, I can feel it pinching. You want to try that? Put your fingers in between its legs against its mouth and you'll feel it pinch.
Ah.
See how Now put your finger up against it. Can you feel it nibbling on you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can't actually hurt you. And it's sort of, in a way, I suppose they're kind of a wasp mimic, the way it's coiled up his abdomen. You know, to a person that doesn't understand them might think, well, that could sting. But, of course, they have no stinger. And pretty little thing, though. If you could look at those eyes, you'd see all those little crystalline facets.
Well, it's a pretty color. It's kind of
it's a beauty.
Green.
And it's got this little orangish tint at the base of the wings.
This particular dragonfly is known as a blue dasher. A common summer sight is a dragonfly or damselfly male and female duo, flying in tandem, one on top of the other. The male is protecting the female from other males.
He wants to make sure his sperm fertilize her eggs. They actually, some of the damselflies do a strange thing where a male will scrape out the sperm from the previous male out of her and then put his sperm in.
The result, eggs, then larvae, then the nymphs we'll see again at the end of next winter. Though we waded through it, we didn't see many water critters in the creek. Steincross was shocked to see the absence of water striders, spider-like insects I like to call water boatmen. They glide across the top of the water. Even in a shallow and still pool, there was no sign of them. I did finally spot some small beetles crawling all over some of the river rocks, but we had forgotten our small magnifying lens to help us identify them. Steincross took a deeper look.
They're all over that rock, too.
Yeah. Spotting. They're little beetles, but again, they're little aquatic beetle. We probably have to look that up and see if we can figure out what they were.
We consulted our book on water insects, an important tool for an entomologist, but we're unable to find an exact match. Steincross took some pictures as they swarmed my red rubber rain boot. Perhaps he'll let us know if he finds out what it is. We do find some miniature or baby crayfish crawling around in some seaweed. Maybe they serve as food for the larger fish swimming the creek. Also along the banks, wasps, butterflies, and caterpillars. But watch out for snakes. We didn't spot any, but another creek goer said he did. Though our catch was light, it was still an entertaining way to spend a summer afternoon. And all you really need is a net. Dr. Donald Steincross is our Ozarks at Large insect expert and an entomologist at the University of Arkansas. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Karnatz.
Crowded jails and tight budgets have states relaxing sentences for drug charges. Some prosecutors, sheriffs, and lawmakers don't like that.
I would like everybody that's on heroin right now to go get treated. But most of the time, when that come to Jesus moment happens, it's because of law enforcement.
The case against sentencing reform today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Listen this afternoon from 3 to 6 to KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. Summer is firmly entrenched. The fireworks are over, and you may still know some young people trying to fight off boredom. Well, the Bentonville Public Library will host magician Tommy Terrific for return performances Thursday. He promises high energy, comedy, and education along with his magic. The Thursday performances are at 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. They're free. They're open to the public. If you'd like to know more, you can visit bentonvillelibrary.org or call 271-3192.
Lake Dardanelle State Park has a movie and some reptiles for kids this week. Thursday night, the park will show Frozen as part of its Sunset Cinema series. The movie will be shown outdoors, and admission is $1 for everybody over the age of 12. It's suggested that you bring your own blanket for the film, shown across from the visitor center. Then Friday, you can join a park interpreter at the park's amphitheater to learn about the reptiles living in Lake Dardanelle State Park. That event is free, and it starts at 6 o'clock Friday night.
Saturday, the Clayton Camp will allow children ages 7 to 12 to participate in activities their great-grandparents may have known during the In the Good Old Summertime Camp. The camp is from 9:30 to noon on Saturday at the Clayton House Historic Museum in downtown Fort Smith. That's a restored family residence of the chief prosecutor of Judge Parker's court. Campers will try their hand and luck in the game of horseshoes, other Victorian-era sports, watercolor painting, hand shadows, singing in the round, and a cakewalk. In a special demonstration at 9 a.m. before the activities begin, volunteer Richard Schatzman will forge a horseshoe on the grounds using his 100-plus-year-old forge and anvil. Also, ice cream. Cost of the camp, $10. Campers should make reservations by calling the museum at 783-3000. You can also register online at claytonhouse.org.
The final two performances of Romeo and Juliet at Gully Park in Fayetteville are tonight and tomorrow night at 7. The free performances are the first production from the company called The Crude Mechanicals. Summer also means musicals on local stages. Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale begins its 48th season with an opening gala for Sound of Music Friday night at the ACO Theater in Springdale. For the first performance, there will be German-themed appetizers like bratwurst bites and Black Forest ham. Intermission will include German chocolate cake. The gala begins Friday night at 6:30. Sound of Music runs through July 20th, and you can find out more at acozarks.org.
The Rogers Little Theater opens their musical Xanadu July 25th. Production runs through August 10th. The stage version is an adaptation of the disco-era movie of the same name that starred Gene Kelly and Olivia Newton-John. Music for the play includes some familiar 1970s fare like Have You Never Been Mellow, Evil Woman, and Xanadu. And yes, just like the movie, this will have roller skates. The musical is at Victory Theater in downtown Rogers. Tickets can be obtained by calling the box office at 631-8988 or going to rogerslittletheater.org.
The Arkansas Historic Preservation Program will present Bringing It Back, Basic Cemetery Maintenance at 10:30 Saturday morning at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History, which is located at 118 West Johnson Street in Springdale. The event will include advice on cleaning and documenting gravestones, as well as safety, repair, and strengthening techniques, materials and tools, and landscaping issues. The lecture is free. If you'd like to know more, call the Shiloh Museum at 750-8165.
The deadline for submitting a short film to Crystal Ridge's Museum of American Art's first film festival is 1 week from today. The theme is Uniting the Power of Art and Nature. The museum will host a screening of accepted films on August 22nd. There are no age restrictions on filmmakers. The movies have to be at least 90 seconds long, but no longer than 15 minutes. For more information about how and what to submit, online, crystalbridges.org.
Family members who like to golf together can enter the Bella Vista Village All-in-the-Family Golf Tournament later this month. The tournament takes place at the Kingswood and Berksdale golf courses in Bella Vista, and it's open to members of the Bella Vista POA and their guests on July 26th and 27th. Teams must consist of two relatives at least 6 years old or older. However, no husband and wife teams will be allowed. Registration deadline is July 18th. For more information, BellaVistaPOA.com.
Just ahead on Ozarks, Antoinette lets us listen to highlights from the new self-titled CD from Time for Three. And tomorrow on Ozarks, we'll turn our attention to peaches and learn what we should know about the summer fruit. Like, when is the best time to eat a peach?
Right off the tree, underneath the tree, in the orchard. That's it. Yeah, I had the privilege of doing that throughout the summer. And that's the best place and the best way.
A day spent at Peach Pickin' Paradise in Johnson County. That's on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. The KUAF Summer Jazz Series welcomes the return of the Sons of Brazil July 20th at 3 p.m. at 21C Hotel in Bentonville. The Sons of Brazil will perform jazz, samba, and bossa nova with a flavor and passion one might think could only be found at a nightclub in Brazil. This series is presented by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society. Tickets are available online at KUAF.com.
When I met Time for Three a little over 2 years ago, I found them equal parts charming and talented. The trio stopped by our studio prior to a performance at the Walton Art Center. The group returned to Northwest Arkansas earlier this year to take part in Artisphere. The trip to Fayetteville included some challenges, and the result was something you may have seen, a YouTube video of violinist Zach Depew playing his instrument in protest on an airport runway. Eventually, the issue was resolved, and Zach, along with his bandmates Nick Kindle and Renan Meyer, arrived in Fayetteville for their performance. If you missed the trio while they were in town, I highly recommend listening to their new self-titled album, which was released last month. The band's fourth album hit the top of the iTunes Classical chart, and it marks the trio's debut on the Universal Music Classics label. The trio met as students at Philadelphia's Curtis Institute for Music. Though these classically trained musicians play violin and double bass, the artists, according to their website, defy traditional classification and perform music from Bach and Brahms to their own arrangements of The Beatles and Katy Perry. For me, one of the highlights of the 13-track album is the trio's new arrangement of four of singer-songwriter Joshua Radin's songs from his debut album, We Were Here. I've been a fan of Joshua for some time, and if the name isn't familiar, his music might be, if you ever watched the television series Scrubs. The song titled Winter was used by the show during a particularly poignant moment of an episode. Time for Three's arrangement of the track incorporates violin, which makes the song more haunting than its original incarnation.
I should know who I am by now. I walk, the record stands somehow, thinking of winter. Your name is the splinter inside me while I wait.
While Time for Three is typically instrumental, Joshua Radin lends his voice to all four of his reimagined tracks. Collaboration is a huge part of the new album, and a number of the trio's original songs feature some incredibly talented musicians. For example, the song Happy Day features Hawaiian ukulele virtuoso Jake Shimabukuro. Saxophonist Branford Marsalis, a member of the first family of New Orleans jazz, is featured on the track Queen of Voodoo. This track is a good example of the group's genre-busting quality. In a news release, violinist Nick Kindle explains the trio's eclectic sound, saying, like most young people in America now, the three of us grew up listening to all kinds of music, 90s hip-hop, grunge, bluegrass, and we've always played a wide variety of music. We're part of a new generation of classically trained musicians who approach diverse styles from the same heartfelt place. We hear and feel it all in a similar way, as just music. Another good example of the trio's ability to blend different styles is the song Chaconne in Winter. The piece mixes Bach's Chaconne with Bon Iver's Calgary. If you're looking for a traditional piece of classical music, the record includes cellist Elisa Weilerstein joining the trio for a performance of Rachmaninoff's Vocalise. Time for Three is a trio of talented, classically trained musicians with the ability to seamlessly transition from one genre to another, and in some instances, fuse different styles of music together. The group's new self-titled album demonstrates their ability to continue creating their unique style of music, but with other artists. The record also seems to make a strong statement that these musicians will not be confined to the traditional classical music box. Time for Three is currently touring across the U.S., and the trio's new album is available now on iTunes and Amazon. More information is available at tf3.com.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about cybercrime and cybersecurity with Brian Krebs, former Washington Post reporter who writes the blog Krebs on Security. He exposes cybercrime networks and as a result has also been a target of cybercriminals. He broke the stories about the credit card breaches at Target and Neiman Marcus. Join us.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Lamar. I was in Lamar yesterday.
Yeah? What for?
Well, went down to talk to some folks about peaches, and they're right between Clarksville and Lamar, so I got there by going to Clarksville, and I left by coming out through Lamar.
Oh, so peaches.
Peaches. We're going to learn things about peaches on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Okay. Well, I look forward to that.
Also, I love the sign in Lamar. There's a general store there that says, this is Lamar, Arkansas, home of 1,415 fine folks.
Oh.
I wanted to see the official population sign to see if they were making a judgment on like 30 or 40 others who...
Maybe.
I don't know.
How do you know if you're one of the 30 or 40?
Exactly. Well, you don't. Mm. They're just, you know.
Maybe that keeps everybody in line.
That's right.
Okay.
You and I were in the same place last night, though we never saw each other.
Right. You tell me you were there. I didn't see you, so I don't know this for sure, that you were at the AMP last night.
For Willie Nelson, Allison Krauss in Union Station, and...
Jason Isbell. Yeah, that was the first time I made it out to the venue as a concert goer. I didn't see Jason Isbell. I had previous engagements, so I got there, I don't know, three or four songs into Allison Krauss. Were you there for the whole thing, I guess?
I think I missed the first Jason Isbell song.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic was, you know, a little bumper to bumper
getting
there. Yeah.
Sure. Well, what'd you think?
I thought each performer, I had seen Willie Nelson at Walton Arts Center.
I hadn't seen any of them before,
in spring.
So.
And Willie was far more animated this time, far more engaged with the crowd, for whatever reason, I don't know. Allison Krauss, I had seen play one song at a Fort Smith festival years ago that KUAF co-sponsored, but we had to take her off the stage after one song because there was a tornado warning.
Right. You told me that story.
Yes.
So I was sort of nervous that that might happen because you were there and I didn't know if it was like bad luck there'd suddenly be this. Because forever, you and Allison Krauss and tornado has been linked in my mind.
Well, that we've broken that.
So good. I'm glad you got rid of that. I've listened to her for a long time, and she's so soft-spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was because I was all the way in the very, very back of the lawn, but I was having a hard time hearing her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think maybe she was just really soft-spoken, but also there was just so many people.
It was very crowded. Now, I took, which those of us who went together, we took what is probably almost the least desired position. We were all the way on one side, kind of in a corner. There was a pole and a bar. I mean, that's what happens at an amphitheater.
Sure.
We could hear fine. And there, because our seats were so not desirable, I think, we had more room than you did. But you said you were packed in.
We were definitely packed in. We were on the complete opposite side of you. We were at the very top of the lawn, right next to the aisle. So the side closest to the highway. And my friends were already there. When I got there, I was sort of like legs folded in a very small area, and I was told.
And you're not a big person to begin with. I promise I don't take up a lot of room.
But I had been told before I got there that some of my friends said, you know, ushers had come by asking people to scoot even closer together. So it was, I guess, fortunate that I got that seat at all. Lots of folks showed up, but there were still walls of people behind us just standing throughout the entire concert. So, it's a really beautiful venue. But I guess I was, I don't know, it's a change, I guess. Mm-hmm. I was a little, I'm much more used to the open space of the fairgrounds.
Which was a stage, some chairs, and then...
And then this open...
Expanse.
Right, and because it was a big field, you kind of had the ability to, you know, move the temporary fences and things to make it bigger if you needed to. And here, like, there's a limited amount of space and you have to cram all these people into that. So I sort of missed having the ability to lay out my blanket and lay down if I wanted to, or get up and like dance if I mm-hmm. wanted to. So I sort of missed that about it. I mean, it's a really nice looking venue, but yeah, I think I'm going to have to try and
Well, they've got some concerts coming up that are getting
it.
A lot of people. Tim
yeah.
McGraw and Miranda Lambert are among the hottest tickets on the country tour, so we'll...
I'm interested to see how that plays out, because I'm sure they'll try and get more people there, because I'm sure there's a much... Not that last night wasn't a big demand, but I know that there's a big demand
right.
for Tim McGraw. And if they try and get more people in there, it'll kind of be interesting to see what happens.
Well...
I mean, I don't know the fire code or anything, yeah. but it just seemed like a lot...
Well, nice breeze, though. Did
yes.
you have a breeze the whole night?
Oh, yes, we did have
yes.
a lovely breeze.
Wonderful breeze. Well, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You and Christina tomorrow mm-hmm. on the program. More music to talk about. Brave Combo, a band from Denton, Texas, will play for free at Basin Spring Park in Eureka Springs Saturday from 5 until 7. The band is celebrating its 35th anniversary. It's hard to imagine a more diverse resume. Listen to this. 7 Grammy nominations, 2 Grammy wins. They've been animated on an episode of The Simpsons. They've collaborated with everyone from Tiny Tim to ESPN. And they are the band that David Byrne of the Talking Heads picked to play his wedding.
Huh.
So, they play salsa, polka, merengue, zydeco, you name it. This is the song Ice Machine in the Desert from their CD, Musical Varieties. They're in Eureka Springs at Basin Spring Park, 5 to 7 Saturday.
Line up in single file, so try not to lose your place. Don't forget your bucket.